The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District or its employees. For more information about the sewer district and its projects and programs, visit neorsd.org. The Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District presents Clean Water Works, a podcast that explores water, sewer, and stormwater issues that affect you and your community. Learn about the people, projects, and programs that are protecting your health and the environment here in Cleveland and throughout Northeast Ohio.
This is our slightly slower period right now since the school field trips haven't really kicked up. But yeah, pretty much during the school year, 5 days a week, we have schools out at the aquarium, which is really nice.
Oh, wow.
So I do field trips, and then I do the interpretation, so like the educational signage in the aquarium and the messages in the galleries.
All right. Yeah, so I was very interested in the exhibit you had at the Clean Water Fest.
Mm-hmm.
You had an overview of the Great Lakes, and aside from living right next to a lake here in Cleveland, I hadn't really given much thought to the Great Lakes as a whole. It was interesting to kind of revisit that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people in Northeast Ohio don't think about that the Great Lakes are right there and like how important that is to our everyday life.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware that that would even be an exhibit or a point of focus for the aquarium.
Yeah, so one of our galleries is our Ohio Gallery, which highlights local species. So we have 28 species that are found within the Great Lakes, and we have some murals tying that connection of us to the Great Lakes. So we have a mural highlighting all the different watersheds in Ohio and where those rivers and streams are draining to. And that lets people see, like, we are connected to the waterways where all these animals are living.
Lily Fichter is the Education and Interpretation Coordinator at the Greater Cleveland Aquarium. Welcome, Lily.
Thanks for having me.
We just had our annual open house, which we call Clean Water Fest. Greater Cleveland Aquarium had a table there. And what were some of the things that you were trying to, or that you were sharing with the public who were coming through?
We were talking to people about the Great Lakes. So we were talking about those local waterways, and we were also highlighting some of the species that are unique to the aquarium. So there's not a lot of places in Ohio that you can see and talk about sharks, but we were kind of talking to people about some of the animals that we showcase and then that local connection we have to the Great Lakes.
There are no sharks in Lake Erie.
There are no sharks in Lake Erie.
Mike's like asking for a friend.
they live in salt water.
I mean, I knew that there were no sharks in Lake Erie.
Yeah. Sure. And I think there are some people who don't know that. Mm-hmm. Like, they're unsure where the difference between saltwater and freshwater, and they see a huge body of water and think there might be sharks. So that's, again, part of our messaging that we're sharing at the aquarium.
For someone like me who hasn't given the Great Lakes much thought since I learned about them in high school. They're the largest freshwater body in the world?
Yeah, they are the largest freshwater system in the world. The Great Lakes hold about 20% of the surface of the Earth's freshwater. So there's a ton of freshwater in the Great Lakes. There's 34 million people who live in and around the Great Lakes watershed. So that's a lot of people relying on these bodies of water. For a lot of people who maybe haven't thought of it, maybe you remember hearing the acronym HOMES in school for teaching you the Great Lakes. So that's the first letter of each one.
Okay, let's see it, Mike.
Huron?
Yes.
Ontario?
Yep.
Michigan?
Yep.
Erie, Superior.
Crushed it.
Nice job.
I'm so proud. I'm so proud.
Okay, so I've retained a little bit.
Yeah.
But they're all connected, too.
Yeah, they are all connected. They're connected through different rivers. There's actually a little lake as well, Lake St. Clair, between Lake Huron and Lake Erie. And then a lot of people might forget Niagara Falls is between Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. Mm-hmm. So that's part of that system as well.
Lake St. Clair just, like, didn't make the cut on the HOMES acronym.
Yeah, what happened?
Is it not great enough?
It's not considered one of the Great Lakes. It is a small little lake. So if you were to look at like a system profile that shows the elevations and depths, it's a much smaller body of water.
Mm. So it's still okay. It's not great.
Yeah, it's an all right lake.
It's an all right lake.
Yeah. I mean, they kicked Pluto out of the system,
I was
so
just
I could say.
That. I was like, Pluto got
They're
axed.
Not going to let that little lake. So Lake Erie is the shallowest.
Yes, Lake Erie is the shallowest. It's actually significantly less water than the other lakes. If you look at Lake Ontario, who's also pretty small of a lake, it holds less than half the water of Lake Ontario.
I've heard that that makes Lake Erie particularly dangerous.
Yes, so Lake Erie does have the most amount of shipwrecks of any of the Great Lakes. There's over 2,000 known shipwrecks in Lake Erie. I'm not exactly sure how the shallowness impacts like weather patterns and storms on the lake. I've heard people make claims, but I don't necessarily know the science behind all that.
Right. That was my understanding, is because it's so shallow, the weather can change very quickly, which can be hazardous for anyone on the water.
Yeah, really. And especially with it being shallow, there's more potential things to run into with a ship.
Mm-hmm. So what are some other things about the Great Lakes that you'd like to share or talk more about the interconnectedness of the lakes?
Yeah, I think something that's interesting about the Great Lakes is if you look at Lake Michigan and Lake Huron, hydrologically speaking, they are one lake. They're located at the same elevation and they are not separated by a river. There's a Strait of Mackinac that connects the two of them. But because they're at the same elevation and depending on conditions, water could flow back and forth either way between the two lakes. But obviously we treat them as two separate lakes. That comes from like a historical context and a cultural context that they're treated as those two separate lakes.
That's okay. Fascinating. I did not know that. I have been there to Mackinac.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Upper Michigan there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. It's a hike.
It is.
Yeah.
What are some facts about the other lakes?
Yeah, so Lake Superior is Superior Lake. It is the largest lake. It holds more water than the other four lakes combined. So there's a lot of water in that lake up there.
How did we get so lucky to have the largest freshwater body just north of us?
Yeah, so the Great Lakes formed 10,000 years ago when the glaciers were receding. So as they receded, they kind of shaped the land, and we got lucky to be left behind with these beautiful lakes.
Just 10,000 years ago?
Yeah, just 10,000 years ago, which speaking in the terms of geology and speaking in the terms of oceans and other big bodies of water, that's really a relatively
yesterday.
Short time scale, yeah.
I'm interested in the interconnectedness between the lakes and how water moves between them and eventually makes its way to
the ocean. If you're thinking about the Great Lakes, you kind of think about the system. You think about water starting in the northernmost lake, Lake Superior, which is that largest lake. It then makes its way through the rivers to Lake Huron, Lake Michigan. We said those are kind of connected. So then it travels through the rivers to Lake Erie and then over Niagara Falls to Lake Ontario. Then through those lakes, after Lake Ontario, it runs to the St. Lawrence River, which feeds the water out to the Atlantic Ocean. So you've maybe seen like the big ships and barges that come through the Great Lakes. There's even cruises that come through the Great Lakes now as well. There's actually a canal system, the Welland Canal, that ships can travel around Niagara Falls to get their way up to Lake Erie and the other more northern lakes.
Mm-hmm. So the water that's feeding, what's the first one, Superior then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of think of Superior as the first one.
The watersheds are feeding that lake, and it's making its way all the way to the ocean.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Crazy.
I mean, how did I forget that?
Are you an Ohio native?
Yes, I am. So born and raised in Northeast Ohio.
Oh, great. That's awesome.
I went to college at Ohio Wesleyan University. So I studied zoology, geology, and environmental studies. So kind of all-encompassing of the environment and the animals and the ecosystems. And then I made my way back up to Northeast Ohio. I worked for the Conservancy for Cuyahoga Valley National Park at their education center, doing education programming, and then made my way to the aquarium where I get to do education programming about animals and water.
Have you always wanted to work at an aquarium, or was this like it ended up being a good fit for you?
I always wanted to be some sort of educator. I loved learning and I loved sharing that knowledge. So that's kind of how I found out about being a naturalist or being like working at a zoo or an aquarium. And I just love that it's such a unique thing to get to talk about, because like I said, you don't always get to talk about the ocean or sharks when you're in Northeast Ohio, mm-hmm. but it's kind of cool to get to bring that to kids that live in this area. If you've ever been to the aquarium, we have a sea tube where you can walk through and you can see the sharks and the fish swimming over you. And I think that always kind of, you have to pause and take a moment to really appreciate getting to see those large animals up close.
And how did you come to have a table at our Clean Water Fest?
Yeah, so we came to Clean Water Fest as part of our partnership with the Sewer District. It's kind of a really unique partnership, I think. We get to kind of support one another's programming, so we get to come out to events like Clean Water Fest. We do career days for middle school and high school students, and normally someone from the Sewer District will come and talk to the students as well for those events mm-hmm. about what types of job opportunities exist in Northeast Ohio related to water. And I think a lot of times those are opportunities the students haven't thought of before.
Mm-hmm. I feel like lots of people don't know that you could be a naturalist or that you could be electrofishing on one of our crews at the Sewer District. There's a lot of jobs in water that people don't necessarily think about right away.
Yeah, a lot of times people think if they want to go into marine biology, they think, oh, I have to go move out to the coast. But mm-hmm. we have the Great Lakes here. We have a lot of water here that are the same kinds of jobs, just working with fresh water instead of salt water.
Yeah.
Did you have an interest in naturalism? And that's not a word. That would be a painter.
That would be, yeah.
Did you have an interest in the outdoors and water and when you were growing up? Or how did you get into your field of study?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time outside as a kid, digging in the dirt, hoping I'd find fossils. and just spending time outside. Even when we would, travel on vacations, we would go visit parks or go to different zoos or aquariums along the way. So I've always had an interest in animals. And once I realized that you could make a job of that and you could spend time outside, spend time moving around, I was like, that's what I got to do.
Yeah. When you're giving tours to the kids, is there anything that they're particularly shocked by?
Yeah, I think a lot of times the kids are shocked when we talk about that there's Lake Erie outside. We'll get a lot of kids who have never been to Lake Erie. And we do have some murals in the aquarium that kind of highlight where our drinking water comes from and where it goes when we're done with it. And I think kids are very surprised to hear that our drinking water comes from Lake Erie. Like, they haven't made that connection before. So it's really interesting to kind of talk through that and get them to see how they fit into that.
That's really cool that you do that holistic education when it comes to water. I think a lot of people probably go to aquariums and they're just like, okay, we're going to look at fish now. And they don't really think about all the interconnectedness with the water systems around them. So I think that's a really cool opportunity, especially when you're on a freshwater body, to really link all those together. It sounds like you guys do a really good job of that.
Yeah, and we also really try to highlight ways that people can fit into that, moving things forward. So obviously, if you're talking about the Great Lakes and the history of Northeast Ohio, we have a mural depicting the Cuyahoga River and the river fires that happened in the past. And we talk about ways that people can help our current waterways. So we have these signs that talk about how we can be responsible with our use of water, talking about maybe when you water your garden, do it in the morning, or taking shorter showers, small actions that don't feel too overwhelming. Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're watering your lawn and you're encouraging people to water at a certain time of day so that the sun doesn't evaporate.
So it doesn't just evaporate off, right. So it's actually getting to the plants, yeah.
Is that to save them money or is it just to save water in general?
I think it's just being intentional with the use of water, especially in a situation like that. If you're using a lot of fertilizers and things, if you're using a ton of extra water, mm-hmm. that's going to wash off those additional pollutants, which mm-hmm. could make their way into the water system.
Treating and using water is expensive, right? Mm-hmm. But also creates its own waste, its own carbon footprint. So I think when you are reducing your use of water, that's less water going into your sanitary system, less water coming to us to have to treat and spend, money on, but more importantly, spend those resources on.
I see. So there are other factors. It's not just that you're using the water and it's disappearing.
Right. Yeah. It goes back into the water cycle. It's a little bit different. I think when you talk about water reuse and places like, Arizona or California, yeah. You're talking about, they have very limited water resources, clean, freshwater resources. Mm-hmm. So the benefits of being very particular about when you're using water are different, I think, than than when you're talking about it in Ohio, maybe.
Cool.
Yeah, so one of the things we encourage is taking day-to-day action. So by conserving water, being thoughtful with water use, but even things like going out and participating in a beach cleanup are great ways to help as well, removing potential pollutants from our Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm. Are there other things that people might not realize about that incredible water system?
I think people don't realize how many people live around the Great Lakes. So 34 million people live around the Great Lakes. That's about 30% of Canada's population and 8% of the United States population. And with that, Lake Erie, we mentioned it has the least amount of water. It's the shallowest lake. But there's 12 million people that live in that lake's watershed. So there's a lot of people living right here by our Great Lake. Mm-hmm.
I think I remember when you guys were first opening WQIS, one of our groups actually helped electrofish and bring fish to the aquarium for your local exhibit. Like we supplied.
Oh yeah.
Fish. Yeah. Nice. I don't think they still do that as a method of like having local fish.
We need more fish.
But like at when they first opened, they were like, "Can you get us some fish from the Cuyahoga River?" And we were like, "Okay."
While you're out.
Yeah, while you're out there, do you mind collecting some local specimens? Yeah. Do you know where your fish come from mostly, or they come from all over?
So our animals kind of come from a variety of sources. Some of our animals are actually born at the aquarium, like our dwarf seahorses, which is really cool. A lot of times we'll work with like other facilities like zoos or aquariums, and we kind of work both ways with that. So sometimes we'll get animals from other facilities, and sometimes like you may have heard we had weedy sea dragons born at the aquarium. We actually had a surplus of juvenile sea dragons, so we gave those to some other facilities as well. And some of our animals, we do have some invasive species that we talk about at the aquarium, like sea lampreys and lionfish. Some of those were actually caught, like you mentioned, in the native habitat and given to us in efforts for managing those invasive species populations.
That's awesome.
You have a tank with, are they called rays or skates?
Yeah, our stingray. Touch pool, yeah. Okay. You can touch the stingrays. We have three species in there. We have Atlantic stingrays, southern stingrays, and cow nose stingrays. Mm-hmm. And that's always a fan favorite.
Do they have their stingers removed, or how is that safe?
Yeah, so we do trim the barbs on the stingrays. So just kind of like we trim our fingernails, we trim that down so they're not able to sting. They have a barb. So on the base of their tail, not at the end of it, but like towards their body, they have like kind of a little part that sticks up. That's the what they use to sting.
Is it just sharp, or is there poison in there?
There is some venom in there for some of the species, but that's kind of their last defense mechanism if they're truly scared and threatened. And in our stingray touch pool, you'll notice they have lots of space to swim down, lots of space to swim around. So if something were to startle a stingray, they're just going to swim away from whatever startled them. They're not necessarily going to use that barb to try to sting.
So they don't mind people.
They're very used to people touching them, yes.
That's nice. They get breaks probably too.
Yeah, sometimes you'll come by and some will just be resting on the bottom because they're
napping.
A break.
I get that.
Another favorite is our invertebrate touch pool. So that's another spot to try to get to touch some of the different animals we have. So in there we have sea urchins, sea cucumbers, even cleaner shrimp that'll come along and try to like clean your hands or clean your fingers. Some of my favorite exhibits are some of our corridors. So we have these tall exhibits.
Yeah, I've seen some of those.
Those are with like our weedy sea dragons, some of our colder water kelp water species.
Oh, that's cool. Are the weedy ones the ones that have like the round parts off of their
weedy sea dragons have these leafy appendages that kind of look like additional fins, and they are related to seahorses, but they do not have that tail that you mentioned that can curl around. So if you see them, you'll see their tails kind of always just hanging straight down.
That's cool.
Yeah, they're really mesmerizing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
those were some of my favorites last time I was there,
with those like big fins that help them to camouflage.
Yeah, they're cool. And I like watching the seahorses when they, like, wrap their little tails around, like, something so that they can just, like, kind of float sideways. Really cute.
Yeah, we have two species of seahorses. We have our potbelly seahorses, which are one of the largest species mm-hmm. of seahorses. And then we have dwarf seahorses, which are one of the smallest species.
So cute.
They're about like an inch and a half tall at their full grown size.
Is it harder to take care of saltwater species compared to freshwater? Does it just depend on the species itself?
It depends on the specific species itself. So I wouldn't necessarily say saltwater or freshwater is harder. It kind of comes down to what all is within the habitat. So a large multi-species exhibit might be a little bit more challenging than a smaller single species exhibit. We have a team of animal caretakers, our aquarists, and the team of them kind of work together to provide all the care needed for the animals. And they have kind of a variety of backgrounds. So what might be challenging for one aquarist might be a little easier for another.
Okay.
We also have a life system support team, and they're actually at the aquarium 24 hours a day. So some of them are working overnight, and they're kind of doing that constant water quality monitoring for us, doing a lot of tests on the water, making sure all of the filters, pumps, everything are running as needed.
Right, keeping all the fish healthy.
Yeah, and then we also have our scuba divers who you might see in the exhibits when you come, doing a lot of our cleaning and maintenance as well.
That's got to be a cool job.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, yeah, I'm a scuba diver at the aquarium.
That's like right up there with like underground or underwater welder.
Yeah,
it's on my list. On my list, thanks to you.
Did you use the word aquarist?
Yes.
Is that the term for someone who works in an aquarium?
Yes. So the aquarists are our caretaker team. So they're the ones kind of feeding the animals, doing the day-to-day checks, doing a lot of the planning behind the exhibits.
What's your favorite thing to teach about when you have schools come in?
I love to get kids to understand the appreciation of what goes on underwater. A lot of times when you go to a lake or a river, you can't really see what's going on underwater. But when you come to the aquarium, you can kind of get that eye-level view of those animals and of those exhibits, and you kind of really get to appreciate the variety of animals that are there. You get to see that close-up underwater view of our local habitats, our local kind of what makes Cleveland unique, and then you kind of get to go through. You do see some other freshwater species highlighted from around the world, and then you get to go into the ocean. So, again, there's not a lot of places in Northeast Ohio you get to see those sharks or touch a stingray, but you get to do that at the aquarium, which is really great.
Thank you so much for coming to join us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was nice meeting you.
We'll see you at the next Clean Water Fest.
Hopefully did you have
a lot of people?
That.
Yeah, did you have a lot of people come up to your
Yeah,
table?
We did. I think we had really great engagement. I think, like you mentioned, a lot of people haven't necessarily thought about the Great Lakes in a minute. So we had great conversations with kids and adults about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I especially in our jobs, or at least in my job, I am often very focused in on like a specific stream reach, right? Mm-hmm. Not even a watershed, but like this one 500 linear feet of stream, because we're focused on like a specific project.
Yeah.
And so it's always nice to have someone come in and talk a little bit at a larger scale. Even when we do talk about like Lake Erie at work, it's usually just Lake Erie. Like, we're never talking about Lake Superior, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's nice having that like zoomed out view.
Thinking about how we are all working together to
exactly.
keep this place healthy.
Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Did you know eligible customers can save up to 40% on their sewer charges? Learn more about the Sewer District's cost-saving programs and use our discount calculator at neorsd.org/save or call 216-881-8247. That's neorsd.org/save or 216-881-8247.
Clean Water Works is produced by the Communications and Community Relations Department at the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. Our music was composed and performed by G.S. Schrey. If you have a question or suggestion, or if you'd like to learn more about the Regional Sewer District, visit neorsd.org or call 216-881-8247.